Marco champion with Inter Milan this season. That was a really crazy throw-in, and what a start for Albania. Berami, what was he thinking?
Hello and welcome back to Say a Spotlight. This is episode 131 and we're your host Jake
and Matt
here to shine our Say a Spotlight onto the Euros.
Yes, so Serie A is over, Serie B is over, so now it's time to look at the Euros, and obviously being your favorite Serie A podcast, there's only one way to go about it. So many of our players are representing their countries at the moment on the international stage, so we're about to shine a light on them and let you guys know exactly how they're doing.
So far I've been really enjoying the tournament, bro. I don't know about you. What are your thoughts?
Definitely. Well, a lot of the time I'm at work when the games are taking place, so I'm not getting to watch as much as I would like throughout the weekend. Obviously, I'm watching all the games, which is great. There's also a screen showing the games just outside work, but through the glass and it being a couple of meters away, it's quite difficult to see what's going on. Mm. But when I do get to watch, it's really exciting. One thing I really like about the Euros and about international competitions is that it's almost like a game of FIFA. It's so attacking. It's so end-to-end. There's so much passion into it. It's like there's so much on the line with every single game, especially when in the group stages, your fate is totally on three matches. And then after that, on one game after one game after one game. Yeah. So a lot on the line.
It feels old school.
Yeah.
Even the fact that, for example, you have Turkey against Georgia, for example, and it produces a spectacle. And then you look at Kvaratskhelia, who in theory should be super frustrated with his teammates. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to flail his arms around and act all frustrated because he's playing for the badge. He's representing his people. You know, there's no ego to it. It's pure. It's authentic. And you get to really see, like, I really enjoy after watching a game, watching the goals in the native language commentary.
Absolutely.
It's incredible. Romania had a few good ones as well with their 3-0 victory over Ukraine.
They must have three perfect commentary pieces there. Probably contenders for our commentary intro piece.
Yes, but of course we had to go for the record breaker, right, brother?
Yeah. Shall we start off by talking about that game? So obviously, we're going to start with Italy, right? Because we assume that most of you that tune into Serie A Spotlight are following Italy the closest. Bit of a shock immediately, 22 seconds in. A record was broken for the quickest goal ever scored in the Euros. It came through Bayrami.
Yeah, Sassuolo's Bayrami nowadays.
Sassuolo's Bayrami, yes. Yeah. So that was quite a shock. So there was a lot of talk going in about the formation that Italy are going to use. They're more set up for a three at the back, but obviously Spalletti specializes in a 4-3-3 formation. There were talks about should Calafiori and Bastoni start alongside each other since both are quite offensive centre-backs. What did you make of the starting 11?
So I thought it was a pretty safe 11, pretty good calls all round. I was really impressed by Calafiori and his performance. Of course, he's making international headlines nowadays with his aura and his 2003 Italy World Cup image, you know. But I think people need to calm down a bit with Calafiori. It's true, he played amazingly and he has a bright future. But to call this a Maldini-esque performance is a bit of a stretch, I think. But yes, I thought that starting with a four at the back was well suited for Italy. Frattesi started in there, and I'm not sure if he'll be starting the next one, judging by how much Spalletti
was screaming at him,
singling him out over and over again. I liked how Scamacca was deployed, pressing high and cutting the channels from Hisai and Mitai, the fullbacks, to Aslani, basically, and Ramadani. Albania have pretty much a Serie A 11 as well.
Yeah.
With Bayrami, Ramadani, Aslani, Jim City, Hisai, Strakosha. These guys are all, of course, or have all been Serie A players. So this felt like a bit of a weekend game, you know, like a typical Serie A game to me.
I agree with you regarding the lineup that a 4-3-3 is probably best suited for Italy. And then we do see that when they're in position, it looks like it does look like a three at the back, with Di Lorenzo or Jorginho kind of coming in deeper over there. So I do like the starting 11. My one concern was Calafiori and Bastoni starting together, like I said earlier, because there is a world where they get caught out on the counter, because they both like going up for corners, for set pieces, and ideally you'll have both of them because their attacking threat is amazing. Mm-hmm. Even carrying the ball forward, you've got two players that could really turn defense into attack in a matter of moments. They're the two center backs that did it best all season last season in Serie A. These two, they're a perfect example of what, you know, an attacking minded center back should be. I made this little... I realized something about Italy's success on the world stage and on the European stage. And it seems as though whenever they do succeed on a European or world stage, like the 2006 World Cup, the 2020 Euros / 2021, they always have great set-piece routines. And I think this season is going to be no different. Reason being, they've got plenty of players that could whip in a dirty ball, particularly Pellegrini and Di Marco.
Yes.
Of a few, because I'm sure Jorginho and Barella can also whip one in.
Even Pellegrini can whip it.
Yeah, no, Pellegrini, number one whipper, like absolutely. The number one whipper alongside Di Marco.
Di Marco, I was going to say, for me, it's him, man. He's got a mean left foot.
But then there are three players that could really fucking get to the end of them. And those are Calafiori, Bastoni, and Scamacca. Yes. I remember in to the 2006 World Cup, Materazzi up there when Pirlo was knocking them in.
Yeah, of course. It's true. I mean, set pieces have always been a big part of Italy's game, because Italy view the game very pragmatically. They view the game very logically, right? That's why Catenaccio was their philosophy for so long, right? Frustrate, disrupt, score and kill, basically.
Yeah.
And there are elements of this but not exactly. It's like a modern version of with those kind of principles still
exactly
in mind, you know. Spalletti has them playing some nice football, some nice fluid football. They were really fun to watch. Your defensive worries about the center backs, fair enough, but it's crazy the ball retention that they have. Man. This is a very technical 11,
absolutely,
you know, and that's what Spalletti wanted. You know, he made it very clear that he didn't call up Locatelli for that reason, exactly. In his opinion, yes, But yeah, I think these guys can all play football pretty damn well.
And I think what I liked is how progressive the entire team was. It seems like when everyone got the ball, they were passing the ball forward when they had to. When they had to pass the ball forward, when they needed a goal, they weren't shy to do so. Particularly the two centre-backs again, and then particularly even Frattesi, to be honest. I didn't hate how he played when he was on the ball.
He was all right.
Because he and Barella, those two really caught my eye in midfield, particularly Barella, obviously the game that he had. But the game started off with that record being broken for the earliest goal in Euros history. And the mistake was made by Di Marco, so obviously Spalletti, to be a little bit safe, he's like, I must start a bunch of Inter players. It's probably not even to be safe. They're genuinely the best options, right? Bastoni, Barella, Di Marco are three of the best players on the pitch. With that being said, the mistake was made through a miscommunication between Di Marco and Bastoni.
Absolutely, yes. More Di Marco's fault, in my opinion, of course.
I think so. You just don't throw the ball into your own box, bro.
What are you doing? And Bairami, of course, the Sassuolo man, former Empoli man, we know him well in Serie A. He's been playing in Serie A since 2020. Managed to score the earliest goal, yes, as you mentioned, in Euros history. But what impressed me the most about this Italy side is that they remained so calm and composed after that. They were collected. They were patient and build up and in transition. They didn't panic. They didn't attack. They didn't just, you know, like pass to Chiesa, who just looks at the ball and charges forward and panic and cross. They were calculated and how they continued the game from then on. And they got back into it immediately.
I think out of the top teams, I was mainly impressed. Obviously, there was Germany that had a great showing. Spain had a fucking good showing as well. France and Portugal, I wasn't incredibly impressed by, nor was I impressed by England. I think they're not press resistant in the slightest. I think Serbia had them playing their game. I think Italy just from round one, do look to be one of the stronger teams. Mm-hmm. Now, Albania isn't the easiest game in the world. Like you said, they've got a bunch of Serie A players and a bunch of hard-working players and an organized squad overall. I was super impressed by Aslani's performance.
Oh, he played really well.
He rocked that midfield for Albania. He was the center of their midfield.
And a player who's hardly featured since joining Inter. Sorry.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But clearly he's it's great just being exposed to the talent that he's exposed to in the training camp with Inter. And when he has played for Inter, he seemed good.
Yeah.
And it's no wonder why Inter were after him and why they got him in as a vice for Hakan Çalhanoğlu. I thought, do you blame Hisai remotely for Barella's incredible goal, by the way? It's tough too.
It's not a good look, eh? When a defender ducks out of the way. Now, granted, you can say that it's instinctive to duck when a ball is flying at you. But
yeah.
Some might argue, the best would argue that it should be instinctive to put your fucking head in front of it.
Like John Terry.
I remember one moment. I don't even know when it was. At some point in my life, there was a European tournament happening or a World Cup. And Terry was on the floor, on the line. And someone scored. The ball went in, but you see Terry like leaping upwards and just extending.
I don't think it was a goal because I know what you're talking about. I think he, as in Terry, didn't make contact with the ball, but it didn't go in. I think it was either saved or blocked by someone else.
But if the ball had struck his head the way he was extended, it would have snapped his neck in half. Like, but yeah, that's
Terry has never been. Terry's been questioned for a lot of things, particularly off the pitch. But his bravery was obviously second to none.
You can't be representing your country and ducking out of the way for a goal. I was impressed by Jim City's performance as well, bro. Expect nothing less from him. No, the anchor of the Atalanta team, as we always call him, he was super.
He did some very solid man marking on Scamacca, and I think it's, you know, he knows his teammate very well. So, and if you look at his heat map, let me just pull it up over here so you can see as well. You could see him following the area in which Scamacca plays with his back towards goal, straying off to the side, letting the midfielders come in. So he was following him around quite significantly. I also just want to shine a bit of a light because Broha, the striker, has been linked quite heavily to Milan as an alternative for Xerxes, an alternative for Dubrovnik, whatever his name is, and an alternative for any other backup options that Milan have. What did you think of Broha? I don't think we saw too much of him personally.
So Broha joined Fulham this season, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Yes, on loan from Chelsea.
Yes.
And then this really average striker for Fulham, this exploded, is where they got from,
right?
Theo, exploded and they didn't get to see much of Broha either. No one has an opinion on Broha, it seems, for the time being.
And to be honest, there wasn't really much
many opportunities
to write home about from this game.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was there, to be honest. He was there.
He only had 22 touches in an entire game. He was actually replaced by a certain Manaj, bro.
Ray Manaj. Those of you who have been watching Serie A very closely or listening to us over the past 3 years, to be honest now, will remember Ray Manaj. Ray Manaj was, of course, an Inter youth player. And he has featured for the likes of, was it Benevento? Was it Spezia? For sure. I believe both of those teams, if I'm not mistaken. I will double check that and let you know in a second.
In the meantime, I'm just going to run down a couple of the players from Albania that feature in Serie A. Strakosha, Hisai, Jim City, Aslani, Ramadani, Bayrami, Broha, potentially next season, we'll see about that. And unused substitutions, there's also Berisha, who we'll all remember, Ismaili, Kumbulla.
My lord.
Yeah, and Kumbulla, my lord. Yeah, those are them. And obviously Ray Manaj as well. So a very heavily Serie A influenced team over here.
Yes, of course, Manaj was with, he's been everywhere. he has been. Sampdoria, journeyman. Juve, Cremonese, Inter, Pescara, Pisa, Barcelona, Granada. He's been
absolutely. Of course, Barcelona. There was all
Spezia
that.
Spezia as well, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Spezia for sure. That's where I remember him most prominently. Also, Folorunsho came on for Barella, making his debut for the international team. And Folorunsho, actually, I'm just going to pull up his age because I believe...
He's
26 years old. He's 26 years old. I thought he was much younger than that, to be fair.
He's been out on loan for his entire career.
Yeah.
From Napoli, poor guy.
Literally.
One more thing before we move on is that Ramadani, Iber Ramadani of Lecce, who played for Albania in midfield, the ever-impressive Ramadani, to be honest. He's one of those players you don't really notice unless you look carefully and then you notice what a shift he puts in. He's been linked to Napoli. Conte wants him.
Okay.
So we'll probably be seeing him there because Conte always gets what he wants, right?
Yeah, that's it.
So now we can go group... we can finish Italy's group, actually. Yeah, we can go on to Spain, Croatia.
Yes, and Italy are actually facing Spain. And I'm going to do the classic thing. Tomorrow or today, if you listened when the episode came out.
Yes, Spain, in my opinion, looked absolutely dominant against a disappointing Croatia side. It's not disappointing, technically, Croatia as a team. It's more like they've overachieved for so long that they've inflated the expectations that we should have of them, because they're a small nation relative to their to what they managed to do on the international stage. They have a squadron of aging stars in the likes of Brozovic and Modric, for example. Brozovic playing in Saudi, Modric at the twilight stages of his career. Many of the OGs are gone. In fact, Kramaric is still there, 32 years old nowadays. Pongracic from Lecce, started at the back over here.
Obviously, would you remember Prime Perisic, Prime Mandzukic, both representing this cut. So absolutely. You're right, this is what I
was telling... Pasalic and Perisic as well came on this game. Go on.
I was telling the girls about this.
I'm sure they were super interested.
No, because they were shocked that Spain beat Croatia 3-0. They're like, wait, aren't Croatia good? And I'm like, how interesting. Because the 10 years you've been with Sarah and the 6 years I've been with Key, Croatia have really been overperforming on an international stage.
Yeah.
The first World Cup final I spent with Key, France-Croatia, that's how I calculate how long we've been together, by the way, how many World Cup finals we've seen together. Obviously, they made a World Cup final. They progressed in the Euros. I think they had knocked out England in one of the Euros as well. So they've been overperforming for the last few years. So now suddenly, if they get beaten by a Spain side that is star-studded, you can say. They do have a star-studded team. If they have a bad showing against them, then it's like, oh, what happened to the mighty Croatia?
Yeah.
Croatia have been overperforming. They do have a lot of players that obviously catch the eye. They have Luka Modric, Brozovic, Kovacic, among other names that are world class.
Gvardiol nowadays,
Manchester City, very versatile defender.
Even the keeper was a hero in the World Cup.
Livakovic, of course. Yeah. Let's go through some of the Serie A players that featured over here, or former Serie A players that have featured over here.
Fabian, or former, I think, no.
I believe probably, so. Yeah. Well, no, because there's Marin Pongracic as a centre back for Croatia, but that is pretty much it. Brozovic, who obviously 2 seasons ago represented Inter, and he was that fucking number 6 for them, the metronome.
So important.
Yeah, Kovacic, who was also at Inter. On the bench, are there any names that stand out to me? Martin Ehrlich, he doesn't really stand out to me. Sosa.
It's not the same one, though.
It's not the same one.
No. There's Piaka, though.
Piaka and Pasalic.
Yes, Piaka nowadays, Lord knows. Let's actually check very quickly. Marco Piaka, those of you will remember him joining Juventus instead of Milan, and then someone tweeting him saying, like, enjoy warming the bench, and he replied saying, warming the bench at Juve is better than what you're doing. Roasted, to be honest. Literally. He's totally right. Piaka nowadays plays with Rijeka. I thought that was an alcoholic beverage, personally.
I'm quite sure it is.
Rakia. Yes. He has been everywhere. He's been with Juve. He's been with Fiorentina. He's been with Torino, Empoli. But yes, now he's been freed from the shackles of Juve, who've been loaning him out non-stop, Marco Piaka. So nice to see him still getting called up by the national team, though.
And since you mentioned Torino, I want to point out that Vlasic was carrying a bit of a knock, but he is in the squad. And Perisic obviously featured, and also Pasalic, who we've already mentioned. When it comes to the Spain national team, Fabian Ruiz grabbed a goal. Obviously, all of you would remember him in his Napoli days. He spent quite a long time at Napoli. And I think that is pretty much it for the... Yeah, that's it for the Spanish national team. I don't believe we've seen any other of them in Serie A.
I liked Morata playing him through.
Morata, of course. Former Juventus striker.
Of course. And apparently they're interested in him again. It's like... Ever since I've been alive, Juve have been linked with Alvaro Morata.
Literally, bro. Literally. Yeah. And now ever since I've turned 20, Milan have been linked to him as a fifth option.
Can we also take a second? He's not Serie A related, but Lamine Yamal, man, is just insane what he's doing.
16 years
what
old.
What the hell? Like,
and they...
First of all, child labor. Right? Having this guy work.
I don't know if he's milking it to a degree, but he uploaded a photo of his homework. His homework at the Euros. As if you do. I'm sorry, bro. Don't do your homework at the Euros.
I would never do my homework again, bro.
Bro, I didn't do my homework. I remember when I reached 4 or 5, I'm like, I have free will. I am not going to do my homework. Yeah. And then I just double the hours at school.
Exactly,
every,
double the hours. After school. And every parent's day, I had to work for 3 days straight without sleeping to catch up on my homework.
I had to water the garden, like, yeah, and do all that.
But Yamal, man, what a player, honestly. Madonna. Like, how is he with that? Yeah, he's what, 16? Is he actually
16? He's 16
years old.
I
hesitate to say it because it sounds so ridiculous.
It sounds
16.
Mental. And when I was 16...
And can you imagine, he's against Brozovic and Kovacic, man, in there, like, that's a, and Gvardiol, Pongracic, these guys have elbows and knees, you know what I mean? Like,
and the thing is, look at the Spain team, they were playing the ball to him. They could go down Nico Williams' side, but no, they keep choosing Lamine Yamal's side, and he is super, super impressive.
Yeah.
I do think that the only difference between these two teams, however, was that Spain took their chances. I think it wasn't exactly an even affair, but even if you look at the attacking momentum of both teams, Croatia had a good number of chances as well. Unai Simon had a great save at a point, I forgot on who it was. But I don't think Croatia were terrible. But now, a little sneak peek into round two, they were about to beat...
Albania.
They were about to beat Albania 2-1, but Albania equalized in the last minute. So now they're in a lot of trouble, Croatia, because they have 1 point in 2 games.
They need to beat Italy.
And one of the games they should have won against Albania.
Yes.
They should have won.
Not looking good for them at all. By the way, we've missed it. We've got the game on behind us because that's how we rock.
I think Gundogan scored because I saw him celebrating.
Germany are beating Hungary 2-0, of course. So yes, that was Spain-Croatia, which ended 3-0. What a spectacle, what a testicle. I was a little bit disappointed, to be honest, bro. I don't like smashings like this. I don't like spankings. But the biggest disappointment of them all came on match day one when Germany... From the very get-go, absolutely annihilated Scotland 5-1.
Oh,
and you could tell it was gonna go downhill. There was a tweet, you know, we addressed it in the moment, but in the third minute, Tierney won a goal kick, and he celebrated
like
you know, like come on. I'd love to see it, but yeah, it wasn't looking good. They had played themselves in behind 3 times when Tierney celebrated that. So it was quite obvious that they were in trouble.
I mean, absolutely. Firstly, a couple things about Scotland. I think, number one, Scotland have an 11 of good players. I think they have a couple of players like Tierney, Robertson, McTominay, and obviously the injured Ferguson, who are... very good players. I think Ferguson, Robbo, and Tierney, even McTominay to a degree, are on the cusp of being great players. But other than that, they are a team of humans. They are a team of people that are... Like, if you and I go to the gym for 3 years...
We'd look like them.
I think their achievement is making it to the Euros.
Yeah.
I was looking at some other podcast snippets rather on TikTok that were doing the predictions of each and every group. And these people that just follow the Premier League, a lot of them were overrating some of the players that they've seen play in England and saying, ah, Scotland number two behind Germany in Group A. And I think it's a little bit ridiculous.
Oh, though. It is obviously ridiculous. Yes, yes. I mean, Scotland aren't great on paper. You know, they've got their few standout players like, you know...
like the ones I mentioned,
yeah,
bro.
Literally, so the ones you mentioned. There is one guy on the bench I was surprised, and it's Billy Gilmore, like Brighton. You know, play him.
That's true.
He had a great season. Play him.
I think the only...
I don't know why he didn't.
The only Serie A linked player we had over here, in case you guys forgot he was ever in Serie A, was Antonio Rudiger, former Roma
yes.
centre-back. Yeah, he got known in wearing Roma's kit. He moved to Chelsea after that and then to Real Madrid.
Not to mention Emre Can, goal scorer.
Of course.
Featured at Juventus.
Of course, of course. Can.
Yes. Also, I want to give a shout out to Niklas Fullkrug, who I absolutely love.
He's so cool.
If Fullkrug is on the pitch in an international tournament, at least, because I don't have the time during the regular season, I'm watching.
He's cool, man.
I love his build. I love the type of player he
is.
He's
your favorite kind
striker.
Of player.
He's
you
my
like,
favorite.
You
type
like
of,
big nines.
I like
man.
Big nines. When it comes to a striker, I don't want any of this mobile drops deep. I want a big target man who will press, who you can bloody cross to. And that's what I want.
Yeah.
Any manager mode, any football manager career I make, I always buy a ginormous striker. That's always what I want, like up front. And Fullkrug is crazy cool as well because he's also missing a tooth. And at that level, when you're missing a tooth, it's just, you know, respect.
It's hard,
respect.
Bro. It's hard.
Fuck that tooth.
If you lose a tooth and you don't get it, oh, cleared off the line. if you lose a tooth as a professional footballer, leave it.
Yeah.
Leave it out because you'd scare the fuck out of me. I'm not squaring up with anyone who has a
missing tooth at that level. Like,
literally.
He's a different
Unless
animal.
Unless it's a crackhead.
Have you
a crackhead, I would fuck up.
Have you heard... Oh my god, I forgot his name. Martin Adams, is it? Martin Adams. Yes.
Summer of 69?
Martin Adam. Have you heard of Martin Adam?
Which one of those two first names that you mentioned? Ah, the...
the big Hungarian
The target
nine.
Man.
Yes.
The target man.
Coming on. He's been memed, this guy, for his size. He's an absolute beast of a player.
You heard him say he has big bones.
Yeah,
man.
I heard him say. He said, I was born like this. And I highly doubt it because his mother would have ripped him off giving birth to him if he was born like that. But yes, he's another cool player to watch. You know, again, big guy, big beard, you know, super leaks testosterone.
He's a big thing.
He's a big thing.
What
yes.
did you think of Germany overall?
Germany put on a show.
Germany, but aside from this game, now they're beating Hungary 2-0. Hungary are also in a lot of trouble, man. But Germany, firstly, home nation.
Yes.
Secondly, they have... some players over here, they have two in particular that I adore. Firstly, I'm going to say three instead. Rudiger at the back. Rudiger is a champion.
He's awesome.
Rudiger is a little champion. I believe he won the Champions League at Chelsea. I believe he did. I'm quite sure he did. And he won it at Real as well. But the two players, to me, that are just world-class and are among the two best players in the world... are Florian Wirtz, who is Leverkusen's superstar. He is he's the guy for Leverkusen. And Jamal Musiala. I love watching Musiala. To me, bro, he's like this with Bellingham. They're so similar. They're so similar in quality.
They are. I take Bellingham at the moment simply because I think his mentality is just next level. Rudiger did win the Champions League with Chelsea, by the way.
Yes.
I think that Germany have many advantages this tournament. They're home and they have a great 11 with depth. Not to mention they've got probably the most highly rated manager in the tournament.
36 years young.
36 years young, Julian Nagelsmann. He is a very promising manager, plays a very attractive brand of football. They're
former
very lucky
manager, former manager of Bayern Munich.
Yes,
as
exactly.
Well.
Yes. Spalletti, of course, is a league winner with Napoli, so he will be one of the best. Deschamps is a very well-known international manager decorated. As well, decorated. But I think internationally, if you had to ask the average football fan who the best manager at the tournament is, they would say Nagelsmann, I think.
Mm.
Yeah. They definitely won't say Southgate.
No, they won't say Southgate for sure. We'll get to Southgate. I'm sorry, I'm going to be a Serie A head, and I say I believe the best manager in the league is Spalletti.
I mean, yes, he's won the league.
I strongly believe it is. And that is with no disrespect to Nagelsmann, because he's phenomenal. But Spalletti, to me, he's a goat. What he did with Napoli, playing the most dominant football ever. And then you see what Napoli do the following season. They turn to nothing. They finish ninth or whatever the fuck they finished.
Not to take away as well from what he's done with the likes of Roma as well.
The likes of Inter. He brought them back to being a top four team.
At Roma, I believe he had them close to overtaking Juventus, who were on like an 8-year at the time winning streak in the league domestically, yes. But anyway, we can move on to Hungary, Switzerland.
Yes, still in the same group over here, naturally group.
This ended 3-1 to Switzerland, of course.
Very impressed by Switzerland.
Very impressed by Switzerland, quite disappointed by Hungary in this one, as Hungary had a very good Euros the previous tournament.
Mm-hmm. I was never on the hype train for Hungary because I watched Malta beat them. I watched Malta beat them 2-1, bro.
When though?
When I was maybe 10 years old. So this is around 16 years ago. Their keeper was wearing grey trackies. I believe Shkembri and Mifsud scored. Shkembri and Mifsud, I think. It was amazing. That's why I never really believed in them. But obviously they do have a couple of great players, and like you said earlier, they had a great tournament last time round, so we believe in them. So. But they are now in trouble. But Switzerland are another team that is full of Serie A talent. Jan Sommer, Ricardo Rodriguez, Michel Abischer, Remo Freuler, Dan Ndoye. And then on the bench, there are some other names as well. Shaqiri played for Inter, no?
Yes.
At one point. Shaqiri played for Inter, and those are them, basically. Yeah. But a lot of Serie A talent.
You look at Abischer, who got a goal and an assist this game against all odds. No one would have predicted this. We've got a fantasy football kind of predictor thing for the Euros. And absolutely no one took Michel Abischer. And he got a goal and an assist. He would have been a genius had you taken him.
I took him for tonight's game.
27 years old. I haven't taken anyone, by the way. I need to do that. 27 years old, featured 36 times in Serie A this season, averaging 62 minutes per game. He played very well. He's a pivotal part of that Bologna midfield. However, his job with Bologna is deeper and it's more low-key. Mm-hmm. With the Swiss team, it seems like he's more involved in the action.
Yeah.
I was very impressed by his performance, as well as the performance of Dan Ndoye.
Yes.
Who we know what he has to offer from watching Bologna. We know he's going to give you like that industry, and he's not going to stop running, and he's going to take it to the byline, and he's going to try to create. He looked absolutely amazing this game. Not to mention Freuler as well, keep the metronome alongside Granit Xhaka, keeping play going, playing it from left to right, and Ricardo Rodriguez, who's, by the way, I don't even think he's 30 years old nowadays, is he?
He must be like 33.
Ricardo Rodriguez is
31. Scroll up, it was there.
It was there, 31. If you saw it, I believe you.
I think so. I don't believe myself sometimes, bro, so just make sure.
Ricardo Rodriguez.
I'm always so impressed by the Swiss.
31 years old, Ricardo Rodriguez. You'd think he's older. It feels like he's been around for so long.
It feels like he's been 27, though. You know what I mean? Like how old was he at Milan? 27. What age did he leave Milan? 27.
Exactly, yes. When did he make his debut for Switzerland?
27. He's a 27-year-old dude.
Yeah. On the Hungary side of things, Milos Kerkez was playing. Those of you who are Milan fans will remember Milos Kerkez, as he was bought to be a deputy of... he was brought in to deputize for Theo Hernandez, I believe, but he wasn't happy with his playtime, so he left. Very exciting player.
Yeah, one thing we didn't mention is Marco Rossi is the manager of Hungary.
One of the Italians.
Yes, one of the many Italians, 59 years old.
20%.
Exactly, exactly. So we say I just dominates, guys, and Italy just dominates.
Has he managed in Italy before? Yes. He's managed Udinese's under-19s. He's managed Lumezzane. He's managed Aurore Pro Patria. And Spezia, yes. He's also been the manager of Spezia in 2018. Mm. 2008, sorry, 2008. Yes.
The Spezia badge really throws me off.
It does. It looks so strange nowadays.
I don't hate it, but it looks a bit like something fascist.
For me, the eagle. It's trying a bit too hard for me.
Mm. It's a bit too hard for who Spezia are.
Are you going to go for a minimal badge or are you not going to go for a minimal badge? This is somewhere in between and it irks me.
Just take it down a notch. Yeah. That's all we want.
Take
that's
the eagle out. You don't need the eagle.
Mm-hmm. But Switzerland, time after time, they always prove me wrong. They're such a strong team. I think their defense is solid as well with Fabian Schär, Akanji and Ricardo Rodriguez. By the way, Ricardo Rodriguez, again, playing like he plays with Torino this season in particular, still bombing down that left-hand side. Man, if you look at his heat map, heavily, heavily involved down the wing. Now, naturally, this isn't a game where the Swiss were constantly on the attack. But it's good to see that he's still got those legs at 31 years old. I think Freuler, again, a great showing by him. And it's really good seeing Freuler alongside someone like Granit Xhaka. Because they both sit quite deep. Xhaka can get closer to outside the box to have one of his chras. But Freuler is a very press-resistant player who makes one hell of... His press resistance and Granit Xhaka's balls makes for a great midfield.
A complete dynamic duo, if you ask me. Back to Ricardo Rodriguez, circling back, you know, because we tend to be like this. Ricardo Rodriguez was born with a diaphragmatic hernia, yes. Which means, basically, for those of you who haven't studied medicine on, like, Serie A Spotlight, we haven't studied medicine, that's obviously a joke. He was born with his stomach, his liver, his spleen, and his intestines all in his chest.
That's
he was given
bizarre, man.
A 50% chance of survival.
Jesus Christ.
Ricardo Rodriguez. To think, man, what he's been through.
That's what I stay saying. Because then it's like...
What a champion.
Like, how many times has Ricardo Rodriguez been counted out in football, like towards the latter stages of his career at Milan? And it's just like, how can you count someone like that out? Literally, from when he was a kid, the guy was just a fighter. He was just an animal.
He was against all odds from the get-go.
Literally. Yeah. The underdog.
So respect.
That should
respect.
Be his autobiography, The Underdog.
This game was very difficult to follow. Personally, in my opinion, Switzerland were in red and Hungary were in white. And the Switzerland have Vargas and Hungary have Varga. And there were many moments where I was like, who the fuck has the ball right now? Uh-huh. I'm not even sure. I had to double take. Like.
It's true. They're both red and white. Yeah. They're both red and white. That is a great observation by us in Serie A Spotlight. The red and whites against the red and whites. Shall we jump to the next game?
It's Poland against the Netherlands, and it was 2-1 to the Netherlands, despite Poland opening the scoring in the 16th minute.
Aha, it looked like trouble for the Netherlands, who obviously going into this tournament missed out on their... They're two best players. They're two world-class central midfielders in De Jong, Barcelona's De Jong, Ajax's De Jong. The guy is just, we all know what he's capable of. Literally, I think everyone in the world wanted him at one point. And Cope Miners, if you listen to episode 1, all the way up to episode 130, you'd hear us praising Cope Miners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
One of the most versatile midfielders in the world. One of the best midfielders in the world. And... played a key part in their World Cup run until they got knocked out on penalties against Argentina.
Absolutely, yes. Once again, we had a nice variety of Serie A players. Of course, we did. Szczesny, the former Juve man, how weird is that to say, was in goal for Poland,
former,
of course.
That's crazy. Former.
Urbanski, Kasper Urbanski started up front. He's the Bologna teenager who's been featuring on that left-hand side. Tiani Reinders started as the number 10 for the Netherlands, despite playing a little bit deep. Jerdy Schouten was in the middle, former Bologna currently at PSV Eindhoven. Stefan De Vrij was at the back, who of course plays for Inter. Denzel Dumfries was at the back too, who also features for Inter. Not to mention as well, Karel Zwiderski of Hellas Verona was on the bench for Poland and came on in about the 55th minute.
Obviously, also Zalewski and Zielinski.
And Berezinski, actually.
They're everywhere. Uh-huh. And also Kiwior, currently at Arsenal, but formerly at Spezia for 3 seasons. So another encounter that's full of Serie A talent. How did you find this game?
So I thought Poland were quite resolute, despite not really having much firepower in general, not really having any capabilities of retaining the ball. I liked the fact that they rely heavily on that left-hand side with Zalewski and Zielinski. A lot of the play goes through those guys, trying to catch Buksa on the other end, that big striker, the 16, trying to involve him. I think that they know their strengths and they play to them. They're very intelligent with their play. The Netherlands, on the other hand, Koeman is their manager. Technically, his CV puts him up there as one of the best. I don't quite like the way they operate, personally, as a team.
Man, I don't know if this is, again, my Serie A bias, but had it not been Depay up front and had it been Xerxy, I think what he'd get with players like Gakpo, Reinders and Simmons behind him would be amazing. I think he should definitely at least be utilized. Like, they had a lead. Why didn't they bring on their 6'4" striker that specializes in hold-up play, who could definitely, at least if you're not going to use him to grab goals, you could really use him to ping the ball to him and he can hold the ball up at the corner.
I agree, and I was saying the same thing, but to his defense, he brought on Wout Weghorst, one of my players. Classic nine, you know. He whipped it into him and he bloody scored, bro, the winner. So Coleman, you've got it figured out, baby, apparently.
And not to mention, bro, by the way, because I'm just looking at the bench of Poland and it's also stacked, man. Krzysztof Piątek.
So this game, the projected lineup was Zwiderski and Piątek starting up together. However, Buksa started, a player I had never heard of, and he scored immediately.
He plays in the Turkish league, I think. Buksa, something like that. Skorupski, obviously on the bench,
of course,
still at Spezia, but
Bologna.
My bad, because I'm also looking at Dragowski, who actually isn't called up. But yeah, Skorupski obviously at Bologna, very highly rated goalkeeper. And Davidovic, also on the bench. A player that probably out of Verona's defenders, he's the best one, not that saying much.
Yeah.
But I think that for Poland, I really like the way that Zalewski and Zielinski in particular played. I think that Zielinski is everything for them in that midfield. He's so technically gifted and he can hold the ball up, as in his close ball control is amazing. His touch is amazing and he sees things that other players simply don't see. And I think having that world-class player at the center of the pitch for a team like Poland that maybe has regressed from season to season, has Lewandowski out injured. I think that's super important. And Zalewski, you know, he has good qualities and bad qualities. He brought all his good qualities and he showed us all of them in this game. He didn't stop bombing left, man.
He looked mature. Stop. He carried his country on his shoulders. Literally. And I think this group is all to play for when it comes to that second place spot. I mean, granted, the Netherlands are kind of head and shoulders in this group in theory. However, Slovenia and Denmark drew 1-1 in the opening game. Poland looked quite, again, they were aware of their own strengths and they played towards them. So I think that second spot is definitely up for grabs. And we can definitely move on to Slovenia-Denmark, which ended 1-1. We got a Christian Eriksen revival and goal before GTA 6, as the youngsters are saying, you know?
It's one of my favorite memes at the moment. That's how everyone's been waiting.
And then they put an FR at the end, for real.
For real. Or On God is my favorite.
On God, like, yes.
On God, I love that girl.
Xhaka Biol, bro.
Yes, bro. Amazing player, and I'm done with this guy getting overlooked aerially, especially, and he's so tough.
They're gonna swoop in for him, aren't they?
I think they are, bro. Genuinely, yeah. He had a great showing over here, and I think Slovenia might be one of my dark horses because the performance they put up against Denmark, who were clear favorites in this game. Okay, probably marginal favorites, but I think anyone who has followed recent competitions would have gone for Denmark over here. But again, a surprising performance from them, and obviously a certain Benjamin Sesko up front, who everyone in the world wants Sesko at the moment.
Yes, everyone will always want Sesko. Jasmine Kurtic came on, remember him?
Yes, I do.
At Parma.
Brekalo.
You know, he was on the squad as well, bro. There's Sandy Lovric of Udinese, and there's also Josip Ilicic.
Of course there is, bro. Who's
looking good, who's lost a lot of weight since his struggles with mental health. And he actually scored in a friendly leading up to this. So hopefully at some point we'll see him feature. I was quite disappointed that they didn't bring him in. But to be honest, they were pushing for an equalizer. In fact, they got in the 77th minute, Slovenia.
Mm-hmm.
They played, to be honest, quite maturely. I like the way that Slovenia operated this game. And of course, he couldn't risk bringing on Ilicic so early when you need to literally play against the best team in your group.
Ah, absolutely.
Or the second best team in your group.
Absolutely. I do hope that they give him a run in, because
if they do, it's going to be against Poland.
When he's on, he's fantastic. And obviously the manager has a greater sense of where he's at the moment. Again, this could very much be part of his revival. Him being involved in the squad after having a good domestic season, after having that heartwarming moment with Atalanta fans, so on and so forth. It seems like things are starting to come together for Ilicic's life, so to say. I do hope that he allows himself to have gratitude for these moments that he's been having recently, because from afar, I'm really happy for him.
Absolutely. He's 36 years old nowadays, playing with Maribor back home. Nice. This is probably the last we'll ever see of him.
Yeah.
Not in life, but in football.
Let's have a look at some of the other Serie A players. For Denmark. Obviously, we had Christensen on the left, Bologna's Bologna. Christensen. We had Morten Hjulmand in the middle. Ah. What a great midfielder.
Oh, he's so good, man. I can't believe Milan didn't snap him up. Hey. He's perfect for Milan Hjulmand.
Hey,
he had such a good season. And then after, okay, so he was playing in Serie A.
Under
the nose of the management. When he left Lecce and went to play in France, not sure he was who he's playing with, then Milan were like, this Hjulmand guy looks interesting. And there were links.
Mm-hmm.
Eriksen, of course, featured for Inter.
Mm-hmm. And Rasmus Højlund, a certain Rasmus Højlund, was obviously at Atalanta last season.
I've already forgotten that.
Getting snapped up by Manchester United. There was Joaquim Mele on the bench, another Simon great Kier. Player. Simon Kjær on the bench, and I think he'll probably stay on the bench because if they watched Serie A last season, then that's probably what's going to happen. Andreas Skov Olsen.
Oh, former Bologna man.
Yes. Mikkel Damsgaard.
Former Sampdoria man.
Where is Damsgaard nowadays?
God knows. I know he had some kind of chronic pain disorder. Mikkel Damsgaard.
Yes, he was. I took him off Fanta and he was out for an entire season, I remember.
He spent the season in bed while half him on your Fanta Calcio.
I think he was.
He's at Brentford nowadays.
He's at Brentford. Of course he's at Brentford. Because these talents go to fucking Brentford and to Southampton and all of these guys.
He started 7 games last season, and guess how many goals he scored? None. 2 assists though.
Are you sure he's playing and he's not getting a hair transplant?
Biggest forehead in the game.
I think we did mention the players from Serie A in Slovenia, right?
Benjamin Sesko was linked to Milan, but of course I think he'll be going to Arsenal.
Probably.
Now, all right, the next group. We have Serbia, England. England won 1-0 thanks to a Jude Bellingham goal in the 13th minute.
Who else?
I thought Serbia had them in the second half. They were pressing, they were winning the ball back, and they were creating chances out of nothing. Give this game 10 more minutes, I think it would have ended 1-1.
Genuinely, I want to see how many times Pickford shot the ball upfield.
That's a stat.
So he had 48 touches, Pickford. He had 41 passes, 25 of them were accurate. Long balls, 29, 13 completed. So that's just the amount of times he's knocked the ball forward. Because the press on Serbia's squad was really, really good, really effective. But I was really disappointed by the press resistance of England. And I'll mention why, because I follow England a little bit. A, John Stones is a central defender that apparently can play central midfield according to Pep Guardiola.
Mm.
Because he can play the ball around, he's calm in possession.
Anytime I've watched City, he's practically in midfield.
Exactly. So I was surprised that every time he got the ball, he was playing it back to Jordan Pickford. B, Declan Rice, 80 million, 90 million, however much Arsenal snapped him up for. Mm. I've watched him in the Prem and I thought he was great. I thought he was really press resistant until I saw him here. And then they're like, who's going to be the third player in midfield? Because there's Rice, Bellingham, and Kobe Mainoo, Gallagher, Trent. They choose Trent because he's a great passer. He's good with the ball at his feet. And again, zero press resistance, always playing the ball back all the way to the keeper. I think in the second half, England played Serbia's game. I think they definitely played Serbia's game.
If they continue to play Trent, Alexander-Arnold in midfield, they're not going to get far. Trent is a fantastic player, but it almost undermines the quality of the opponent when you pop him in midfield there. He's makeshift, you know, it's at this level, he can't. He doesn't have enough experience in that position to just pop him in midfield so bloody cockily. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You've got players, man. You've got so many players who can play that role. And if you want to play Trent, start him over Walker, man. Bring Walker on eventually, you know? You've got bloody Conor Gallagher. You've got so many players,
I think Conor Gallagher is a good player to bring on if you've got a lead or if you need bit of a ruffian in midfield, if you need to just turn up the heat a little bit. I honestly think, I'm going to jump on the hype train a little bit here and say Kobe Mainoo wouldn't be a terrible shout.
Exactly, yes, as well.
He wouldn't be a terrible shout at all.
Anytime I've seen Mainoo play,
Kante again, 2.0.
He plays with this kind of authority that only older players have.
Mm-hmm.
I find it ridiculous that Trent started in midfield personally. He didn't play particularly badly, but again, Serbia's press was too much for him to handle in that position. He lost the ball in some very important positions for Serbia. I was also confused by Serbia's management of the game. When they needed a goal, they took out Mitrovic. And then they started crossing the ball in. So they didn't cross the ball in all game. They took out Mitrovic and then they started crossing. I don't get it.
No, it was weird. And I don't think Serbia are a well-run team at all. Just to go back to England for one more point. Southgate made a lot of big calls. Two players in particular that he left out, Rashford and Grealish. I understand Rashford has been off for like the past 2-3 seasons. He hasn't been his best, right? However, Grealish, I know he didn't have a great season leading up to the Euros. Season before that, he won the treble. And he won the treble by being heavily involved in every single competition that they played. One thing that he offers is great industry in both the attacking phase and the defensive phase. Kieran Trippier is starting left back. Kieran Trippier is a guy that goes forward, likes to whoop a ball in, goes up for set pieces, yada yada yada. Wouldn't it be great balance to at least have the fucking option of Jack Grealish and not get overly hyped by these Newcastle and this and that players that had a good season, that had one good season.
Honestly, I'm looking at the squad, bro, the bench. Like, I was quite surprised that I don't know many of these guys.
And you speak
I don't follow the Premier League
very
closely.
You speak to people that follow the Premier League and say, like Anthony Gordon has to be there, Ollie Watkins has to be there. Cole Palmer, I get sure Eze has to be there.
Ivan Toney's there to bet over 2.5.
Bets the amount of yellow cards and tells his teammates what to do. Go. Jared Bowen needs to be there. The West Ham God, like... I'm sorry, but I think there were... Not a lot, but at least, for example, Grealish isn't a player you leave out. And I heard this thing Roy Keane said, and it was really funny. Someone... I forgot who it was who said to Roy Keane, it's important to have Grealish because he's great fun around the team and he's a good vibe around the team. And Roy Keane goes, well, he's going to do the karaoke and crack a few jokes. That's why you're calling up Grealish.
this reputation of Grealish, I don't know why he feeds it, to be honest. This whole party reputation, I would fucking hate it. You know, everyone fucking parties a little bit, you know. If you like it a lot, I mean, you have pundits saying this shit, you know,
because his
industry on the field, you wouldn't guess that he drinks ever when you watch him play.
It's true. I think he was harshly left out of the team. And
he's a Manchester City left winger.
A part of me thinks when it comes to England, there's the Queen and the King and all that shit. Maybe for the image, nowadays, maybe they leave a certain player out. I'm not saying it's the reason, and it's probably not the reason, but he's not doing himself any favors, for sure. Rashford, who does all the charity in the world, didn't get called up. You know what I mean? So it's definitely not the reason, but I don't think it does him any favors, because someone will say, oh, that guy's not serious. He's not serious. But when he's putting in a last-ditch tackle in the final third, getting a red card to save his team, that's something Grealish will do. Week in, week out.
His industry on the pitch has never been questioned, right? I think you should call Locatelli and they should go to Ibiza together.
Lucy, I think they'll have fun.
Looking at the Premier League, Madonna, at the England 11, I don't think a single one of these men has ever graced Serie A, because if they would, Southgate would leave them out. Don't tell me Tomori doesn't make this team, by the way.
I'm not sure. I quite like this Guehia. I'm not going to pretend I know who this guy is. I thought he was good. I thought he was quite good. I don't think Johnny Stones is droppable. They've obviously left Maguire out. Look, I think Tomori would make the squad as well, but I'm not going to.
He's a good recovery center.
If I start talking about how certain Serie A players should be here, just like that season they didn't call up Tammy Abraham, it's quite ridiculous to me.
I think. That if England move away from Southgate and get a more progressive manager, someone like to attack more, Tomori would definitely be considered. Because Tomori is a recovery centre-back. He's good if you play a high line. Southgate, as he demonstrated this game and as he's demonstrated his entire reign over the English Premier League, English national team, I keep saying Premier League, he fucking plays a super pragmatic game, bro. He's not very different to Allegri, this guy.
Yeah.
You know, only Scotland created fewer chances than England did in this there round. And when you look at that 11, that makes absolutely no sense. These guys are rated very highly.
It's true. Foden sucked ass. I rate Foden so highly. Especially when he plays for a City, he looks magnificent. Even in the last Euros, he was great as well. There's the whole Foden haircut thing going on.
I got it.
But people really have been criticizing him after this game. I think be patient with a player like Foden, because technically he's better than a lot of the players.
Shall we shine our Serie A spotlight on the Serbia team, bro?
Man, I can't believe...
And Rajkovic, right?
Yes, I can't believe Vanya didn't start.
Apparently this guy is really good, though.
I'm sure if they dropped Vanya for him, Vanya's a good keeper.
His name is Predrag Rajkovic.
He's with Mallorca.
Predrag Rajkovic.
Predrag.
Predrag.
I'd love to see post-drag Rajkovic with his tuck going on.
Or mid-drag.
Hey, sisters.
Mid-drag Rajkovic. Like doing a split on the floor with nipple tassels. Nikola Milinkovic is at the heart of the Serbia defense.
And there was a point, bro, the way he pocketed Kane, Milinkovic, who couldn't pocket fucking... Who couldn't he pocket in Serie A?
Bloody Thomas Henry.
He couldn't pocket fucking Piccoli in Serie A. He was getting twisted inside out by everyone.
He played well. Nikola Milinkovic always plays well on this level, to be honest. Sasa Lukic, you'll remember him from his days at
Sasha,
Torino.
Sasha Lukic.
Sasha, yes, there's the woo.
The squiggle.
Nowadays he's at Fulham. Oh, how the mighty have fallen. Dusan Vlahovic, of course, starting up front alongside Mitrovic and Sergei Milinkovic-Savic, who we miss so much, playing in Saudi Arabia and still featuring for Serbia. Not to mention Filip Kostic on the left, who got injured.
And he also got barged by Bellingham.
It looked like a serious injury, yeah?
It looked quite serious.
He was crying and everything.
He's fucked, eh?
Ivan Ilic is on the bench, of course, of Torino. Vanya's on the bench.
Jovic featured.
Featured as well, yes. Of course, the Milan man, who apparently Milan will be redeeming for.
Samardzic, I'd like to start seeing more of him. I think as a game progresses and they need points, and I think he's a good player to bring on, especially in dead ball situations. He's definitely a contender, and he has, you know, a lot of teams tend to pile men back when they're holding on to a lead, and he's one of the players that can have a crack from distance and hit the back of the net. So
I think he should have brought him on, to be honest.
We'll see in the future. Hopefully he'll get more playing time. Serbia, man, Serbia have always let me down in these competitions, and from the last Euros and the last World Cup, I don't think I'll ever put my money on Serbia ever again. Simply because I don't quite get how they operate. I don't really see a system. I'm obsessed with their individuals because of the amount of Serie A talent that they have, and very attractive talent. Fucking SMS, Vlahovic, so on so forth, Ilic. But unfortunately, when I watch the team play, it's only the individuals I'm seeing. I'm not seeing unity. I'm not seeing a team. How could they play against... Who's that country? My God, I'm blanking out. Who's that country they have the rivalry with? Albania. Switzerland. Yes. How come every time I see them play against... How funny, I just made the biggest political error. like if anyone from those regions is listening to me right now, they'd hate me right now.
Yeah.
Switzerland, they have that rivalry with them. And all I see is temper. All I see is temper. In those situations, it is the one that remains the calmest that typically gets the results. But I really see that they're not in control, Serbia. I rarely see them in control.
Absolutely. On to the next group, a team that has impressed me to a crazy level, to be honest. I think this game, to be honest, was my favorite one so far, man. Romania 3, Ukraine 0.
Honestly, I know that Ukraine aren't a superstar of a national team.
Okay. Thought you were going to go elsewhere.
No, not at all. Not at all. I've already made one political error. I won't make another.
You saw what Tonna wrote on the group chat?
No.
He's like, oh my God, man, Romania. Ukraine just got hit by a missile, man. Jesus Christ.
Oh God. You bring that to the podcast.
Not from our words.
No, you only name dropped the person.
Donna, Michael Donna, patron.
I forgot what I was going to say because I got so heavily thrown off by
It's okay. I can just go on to say that this Romania side features quite a few Serie A players or players who have featured in Serie A, like Radu Dragosin is the big man at the back with the ponytail. They've got two Marins. One of them plays in Serie A for Empoli nowadays, Razvan Marin. Dennis Mann, who featured in Serie B last season, has been with Parma ever since they were in Serie A, got relegated, has been with them for two seasons in Serie B, and now is back to Serie A. Dennis Mann on that right-hand side played very well for Romania this game, getting two assists. While on the Ukrainian front, we don't seem to have anyone.
Dovbyk is the alternative of Xerxy, apparently.
Xerxy?
Yes, the alternative for Milan.
Dovbyk
is that Girona
striker. He's a good striker. He's a big guy. I really enjoy watching
and
him.
I
get him behind very well as well.
I'm Team Xerxy, through and through. You know this. But according to how Fonseca utilizes his strikers, I think he said he wants a bit more of a target man. I think
Dovbyk, someone who drops in deeper.
But he has 25 goals, 10 assists.
Yes,
Dovbyk.
Oh, I put him as my fantasy player this game, to be honest.
You did?
He looks good.
That's fucking dirty, bro. That's dirty.
More to come. Romania's bench. Valentin Mihaila.
Yes.
And plays for Parma, has played for Atalanta as well. George Puskas, you'll remember him as that very bad striker who would come on for Genoa every now and then. He came on this game and almost scored an own goal immediately.
Literally.
Yes, but that's pretty much it. I really liked Romania.
You're forgetting a big one,
Ruslan,
bro. Ruslan Maligolski. I can't believe he wouldn't start. He must be carrying on.
You're telling me Stepanenko and Shaparenko are better?
Literally, bro.
Aren't they siblings and play tennis?
Sharapova. No, Ruslan Malinovsky has to play for this team.
Yeah, you have to
pop. He came on in the 83rd minute for Sudakov.
Yeah.
It can't be.
I thought Romania were bloody excellent this game.
I thought Lunin had a terrible performance. Poor guy. I think everyone in the world
thinks his career is going downhill, dude, this guy. He got benched by Courtois for the final.
But he replaced Courtois. He overperformed, saving penalties in the lead up to the Champions League final.
So that was a bit harsh for him to get benched, I felt. And then this performance on top of it, it makes me feel like Real Madrid will move on. They're cutthroat Real Madrid, man. They
but
don't tolerate performances.
But Lunin has been coming up through the ranks at Real, and he's been being loaned out. I remember watching clips of him when he was 14, saving penalties, bro, for like the under-13s or whatever. How old is he nowadays,
24.
Lunin? 24. He has a bright career ahead of him. Now, if he stays at Real and they have a Galactico keeper, then that's his call.
Mm-hmm.
But he can... Hopefully he picks himself up after this Euros and turns things around a little bit throughout the competition. And if he does that, then he has the opportunity to look elsewhere and start starting and getting more game time. Because these are the mistakes a national team goalkeeper can make if they're not getting minutes domestically.
Yeah.
That is why it is so important that you have... Like, that is one of the reasons that Grealish wouldn't have been called up for England. Because he wasn't getting as many minutes.
And after the first one, Lunin's face, you could see the fear.
Man, fuck.
You could see the fear.
That poor guy. Poor guy. I feel so much for goalkeeper.
It was so clear. Honestly, at that point, I'm thinking to myself, fake it, man. Fake it.
Mm-hmm.
Put on, like, fucking hell. Have some self-awareness. Yeah, poor Romania guy, terrorized them, man. Absolutely.
Dennis Mann, 2 assists. Razvan Marin, bullet goal.
Bullet of a goal, yes. Absolute worthy of a goal. And no one saw it coming. And the Romanian commentary, if you haven't seen it, guys, do check out the Romanian commentary of this game. It's absolutely brilliant. Dennis Mann didn't have a particularly stellar game in the fact that he was taking people on, dropping them, you know, breaking ankles and that. But he showed good industry. He showed intelligence.
He's smart.
Knowing when to pass, knowing when to take that extra touch, knowing when to release. He played very well.
I like him for his loyalty as well, bro. He's been with his girlfriend. No, I'm joking. He's been... promoted Parma, got relegated with Parma,
stayed, got promoted again.
Got
a neck tattoo, but stayed.
Literally. I remember him looking a bit more like a good boy. Now he's a bit of a bad boy now. Congratulations on your new look.
Yeah. Do you know, by the way, our next game? Is Belgium
Can we? I'm sorry to anyone Belgian that's listening. Like, can we skip it, bro? I'm so exhausted by Belgium.
Bro, honestly, this is... So first of all, let's start with something positive. Did you know that Andre Duda has work hard, play hard tattooed on each of his knees? Work hard on one knee and play hard on the other.
He works hard with his right, plays hard with his left.
Yes.
What the hell is he doing with his
Andre Duda, Andre's small penis.
Literally, in Maltese.
In Maltese,
in case we're picking up new followers here. Duda means small willy. Duda means willy.
His name is Andre Willy, unironically.
I want to address anyone Belgian who is playing football, maybe at a youth level, and is saying, I want to pursue a career as a footballer. Be a defender, please. Be a defender or a center forward. Because these are the things that are lacking for Belgium. How come... from season to season, they're stacked in the winger department. They're popping Carrasco at left back. They've been doing that cardinal sin for so many years now. And yet, they're so stacked going forward. And then defensively, nothing, bro. Nothing at all. I know there was a period where they had those two Spurs guys, Vermaelen and Vertonghen, I believe. But gone are them days, bro. And unfortunately, these players aren't in their prime anymore. I think Lukaku, to mention the first Serie A player over here, formerly Inter, currently Roma, but probably former Roma, let's be honest, because no one wants to pay 1 cent to have Lukaku on their team. I'm going to be completely honest. Sure, he scored offside and it was tight and there was all that controversy. Should VAR be that strict? So on and so forth. But he missed two sitters in the first 15 minutes. Again, I don't know how. So this guy is in the top 10 strikers that have scored the most goals for their countries. So he's top 10 over there. He is the all-time leading top goal scorer, if I'm not mistaken, for Belgium as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he is.
Yet in the last World Cup, he had... I'm not going to exaggerate. I'm not exaggerating, bro. I'm going to be honest. The worst performance by a striker I have ever seen in my life in front of my eyes as a football fan.
Mm.
And... You're doing your predictions.
I'm doing my predictions right now. I've put Dan Ndoye as my player for
you put
this.
Dan Ndoye?
Yeah, Scotland against Switzerland. I put Ndoye.
Come on, you mighty Scots.
I was gonna put Michel Aubuchet.
I put Aubuchet.
You put Aubuchet. I thought I put Aubuchet, madam.
No. Let's be different, bro. We're rivals. We can't be the same.
Oh, look, bro, Lukaku. When it comes to Lukaku, I think first of all, this game he was hard done by.
Because of the goal.
He scored twice, two legit goals from his part. He couldn't have done anything more correctly. Granted, he missed the one-on-one. Granted, he had his touches that weren't great. But he scored two goals that were legit.
Offside.
Okay, one of them was offside, but then one of them was a handball in the build-up play that was super harsh. Mm. He did his part correctly, Lukaku. I felt that it was super, super, super harsh, that second goal that was called out for them. And that handball, I think the game's gone if that's going to call out a goal, man. Like, that was so far back. It was fucking, his arm was right here next to his body. It ricocheted off the foot right to the arm, like barely any distance between the foot
I get you, bro.
You know what I mean?
I get you. But my frustration isn't only with Lukaku. My frustration is with the entire Belgian team.
Mm.
My point is, if I'm a manager, I don't give... Because you know what... If you, bro, if I was the manager of Belgium and you as a player or my assistant manager came up to me giving me these excuses, I would hang you. Because it doesn't matter, man. You're in the Euros. You've been underperforming each and every single competition. You go in the first game. You're up against Slovakia, dog. You're up against Slovakia and you lose 1-0.
Yes.
It is super, super disappointing. And Belgium, there's a reason I put them as my underperformers in the Lokash episode. Because I genuinely believe they are. Secondly, why isn't Théat starting?
So, yes, that's something I was going to say. Arthur Théat has to start at the back for Belgium, 100% hands down.
I agree.
He's a brilliant centre-back. Uh-huh. Absolutely brilliant.
I don't think Vranks should start. Uh-huh. Former Milan.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Domenico Tedesco is the manager of Belgium, formerly at Leipzig. He has managed Spartak Moscow and he has managed Schalke as well. He's taking over from Martinez, who was responsible for trying to win something with the golden generation of Belgium. This is definitely kind of like the twilight end of that golden generation. And I'm pretty sure he overcomplicated his own life over here, starting the likes of Yannick Carrasco at left back. I think he overcomplicated it. Jeremy Doku as right winger. I felt like every time Doku got the ball, he did too much.
He's doing something that's out of the system.
Yes,
he's doing something that's totally out of the system. This is when people say that United were better without Ronaldo. United were better without Ronaldo, but then people say, but look at the goals Ronaldo has. Sure, but have you seen what Ronaldo does when he gets the ball? How he slows down the play?
Yes.
How
he's not capable
of counter-attacking? How he always wants to do a step over and not, he's not direct anymore? That was Doku in this game. And Doku, I'm surprised he's managed by Pep Guardiola, personally, because he doesn't strike me as someone.
He's completely different than that City team as well. He's kind of the raw, explosive kind of gem, let's call it that. But this game, I didn't like him at all. I thought Trossard wasn't sharp enough. There was a moment where the goalkeeper spilt the ball and it came to Trossard. He should have definitely played Lukaku and he didn't.
I thought De Bruyne was good. I thought De Bruyne will be good. I thought Amadou Onana, or as the journalists called him, Andre Onana.
And he was like, stop my name, mate. Brev.
Brev, Andre's not even my name. You know what I'm saying?
Andre's not even my name, brev. He became English. That was amazing.
It was hilarious.
Moving on to Slovakia, where the grass is definitely...
One sec, because we forgot to say the unused substitute, Charles de Ketelaere.
Idiot!
Utilized in the Europa League final. Great performance for Atalanta throughout the season, but what do we know, bro? What the fuck do we know?
Yeah, not for Domenico Tedesco. Meanwhile, on the other side, we've got Francesco Calzona, who's basically proven to us that Napoli were indeed the problem, bro. Now, this team, where do we even begin? So, they've got Ivan Schrantz on the right with the Maltese surname. They've got Haraslin on the left, former Sassuolo man. They've got a midfield three of Andre Duda of Verona, Stanislav Lobotka of Napoli, Juraj Kučka, 36-year-old Juraj Kučka, formerly of Milan. Lord knows where he's playing nowadays. Let's check that.
He's
playing at Slovan Bratislava.
Milan Skriniar at the back.
Formerly of Inter, of course.
Suslov on the bench.
Currently at Verona.
I think Aubert.
Aubert's definitely a Serie A player.
Was Strelec as well?
Aubert's of Cagliari. And Strelec also was a Serie A player.
Gyomber,
Hellas Verona. Salernitana Gyomber.
Salernitana, of course, Gyomber.
Strelec has definitely featured in Serie A. Don't tell me he hasn't. I'm going to check this quickly. Spezia, there you go.
Just my fucking spidey senses start tingling, man.
The hair at the back of our neck starts rising.
Literally. Not to say, obviously, because I've shat on Belgium a lot. Quite impressed by Slovakia.
Super, yeah. Very good performance.
And again, just to be a bit of a hipster and highlight Lobotka. Because Lobotka is that number six. You said your favorite player is a big nine. Mine's a fucking small six. Mine's the Banasters of the world. Mine's a Pirlo to a certain degree of the world.
I love those players. They're my third favorite.
Third. Second is like 6'1" attacking midfielders who have
height isn't really important. It's a fantasista.
Saponara, yes. Ilicic,
yes.
Andreeva.
Absolutely. Diamante back in the day. Yes, that type
Cassano.
Of player. Yes, absolutely. Someone who can make absolutely something out of absolutely nothing, rather.
A magician.
Luis Alberto back.
Mine are the metronomes. Like, I'm obsessed with Freuler, for example. Lobotka, however, did have a very clean performance. But so surprised by Duda. Because Duda, in his first season, wasn't incredibly consistent for Hellas Verona. Last season, he showed us a little bit more consistency. That's why Verona had a slightly better season. They didn't go to a relegation playout, at least. But Duda played really well.
Yes. Duda's 29 years old, just like my Duda. He was really good this game. I thought he gave a lot going forward and a lot defensively as well. This midfield three in general can get a lot of work done. And I think Kučka being 36 isn't that much of a liability, because if they rest him, it's Suslov coming on.
Yeah.
Can definitely put in a shift over there.
Yeah.
So, I like what Calzona's done with these guys, to be honest with you. They got a win against Solods over here, and they're looking to progress.
They put themselves in a very strong position.
Absolutely.
In a very strong position. Yes. Slovakia. Shout out. Next up, Austria-France. France won. The only goal was an own goal by Wobber.
Yes, so Paul Wobbo. Mbappe forced the goal and then broke his nose, and everyone's anxiously waiting. I saw the photo. Everyone's anxiously, looks like much like Brady. everyone's waiting for an update on Mbappe to see if he's fit to play the next games. Now, apparently, technically, 6 weeks.
I never heard 6 weeks. I heard for the rest of the group stages, he's out.
So I heard that typically when a person breaks his nose, they need to not participate in sports for 6 weeks. This is the general advice that's recommended by physicians who, you know, cater to the normal, ordinary person. However, in a situation like this where you're dealing with professional athletes and the stakes are so high, exceptions might be made. Uh-huh. So I wouldn't be surprised if next week we're about to see Mbappe in a mask, you know, charging down that flank. Yes. I think he'll miss the next one. He'll miss the
He'll miss at least the next one.
Yes.
He'll miss the group stages.
Because if he doesn't, that nose will be a target for everyone.
Literally.
Everyone. Like the next game is against the Netherlands. Can you imagine Virgil van Dijk
Elbowing him in the face, like
definitely. It's part of the game. Eh? He'll definitely hit him with a shoulder.
Even for Mbappe, you think he's gonna go into the 50-50s with a broken nose? Maybe, because he's built different. You know what I mean? But I wouldn't.
Ozyman says the mask makes him feel like he has superpowers.
Well, nice one, Ozyman. Nice one. Why don't you go on fucking Instagram live and tell everyone about it? Just to highlight, obviously, all of you are very familiar with the Serie A talent in France. This team, it's stacked, actually. Mike Maignan, Theo Hernandez, Adrian Rabiot, and Marcus Thuram. And this is Matt from the future saying Kylian Mbappe as well for AC Milan.
Olivier Giroud
far,
on the
far
bench.
In the future. Giroud on the bench, Pavard on the bench. And that is
Coman, formerly of
former
Juventus.
Juve. And is there anyone in Austria?
Yes. In Austria, we've got Stefan Posch of Bologna.
Yeah, Posch.
Absolutely. And Arnautovic of Inter coming on in the 59th minute. Yes, I think that is all, though, for Serie A.
I wasn't too impressed by France, personally. Firstly, I find it a bit odd how they set up. Marcus Thuram on the left kind of thing. Why? They've got players like Kingsley Coman, who I'm sure could do a very good job over there. To be honest, I don't know how his season went. But to me, this doesn't look as threatening a team as it used to be. I think Mbappe used to play on the left and their striker used to be Giroud. But I'm sure they could move things around to make this a more attractive 11.
I would personally swap Thuram and Mbappe. Mbappe would have more space. And it would
It's as simple as that. Or a 4-2-2-2 of sorts. So like a 4-4.
You mean a 2-7-2?
Kind of. So it's like a 4-4-2. But the wingers are a little bit more central. They can stray wide, but then off the ball, they stay centrally and they really fill up. Over there, essentially have the two strikers and four midfielders that are all dominating the center of the pitch, which is a pain in the ass to play against. And if they're explosive enough, like Dembele is Griezmann, maybe not so explosive anymore. They could also shift out wide throughout the attacks, and also having someone like Theo Hernandez and Kunde, they could really follow up on the overlaps while they dominate the center a little bit more. Yeah. But I'm not going to pretend like I'm Deschamps and they should do this and that.
Well, see, I thought that Austria looked resolute. They put on a really good performance this game. They're managed by Ralf Rangnick, who was actually linked to Milan to replace Pioli at one terrible point in time. I thought they looked pretty good. France, now the question is, with Mbappe gone, are they going to work as a team? Or is everyone going to try to step up? And that can work totally against them. So curious to see what happens with France over here. I don't personally have any takes. I don't know. The squad is stacked. I was impressed by Kante. Turns out, man, you can go to Saudi Arabia. If you're good, you're bloody good. It doesn't matter. At one point, there was a last-ditch tackle. The recovery pace on Kante is incredible, man.
Beautiful. Yeah.
So we'll see.
I wasn't too impressed. I think Rangnick firstly has done a really good job with Austria. Even if you look at the qualifiers to get to the World Cup, they went on quite an impressive streak. And they also have some decent players, obviously Sabitzer being one of them. But France, to me, they didn't. I wasn't incredibly impressed by them the same way I was impressed by them when they won the World Cup or when they advanced decently in the Euros. I think they have taken a bit of a step back. I think a lot of their firepower is gone. I have them as my winners in the predictor that we have on Euros. However, just judging by the first round, they weren't part of my top two teams.
Don't worry, bro. I put Portugal and they looked even worse.
And is that a segue? No. Next is Turkey, Georgia.
It would have been a fantastic segue above Turkey, Georgia, which has been the best game of the tournament.
I agree.
By a landslide.
I agree.
Like the tournament's been great so far. But can I
just say, let's be better than the commentator and ensure that we call them Turkey.
Turkey! The commentator was struggling. Yeah. The commentator was really struggling. He'd be like, Çalhanoğlu for Turkey. Turkey.
Making it so obvious.
Like correcting himself. Yes, it's Turkey nowadays. They played a fantastic game. Muldur opened the scoring in 25th minute. You'll remember him at Sassuolo. Sassuolo have been relegated, but their spirit lives on in Euro 2024. Arda Güler of Real Madrid in the 65th minute scored the best goal of the tournament after Georgia had equalized. The best goal of the tournament, I think, by far.
It was great. I agree.
And then at the end of the game, the 97th minute after the Georgia goalkeeper, who's quite well known, he plays in Spain. He's a very good goalkeeper, apparently. His name is Mamardashvili.
He is with Valencia,
yes, bro. Nice. I haven't checked yet, but I remember the commentator.
He is with Valencia.
Super goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. He went up for a corner, proved to be quite a nuisance, but on the counter attack, Turkey scored thanks to Aktürkoğlu. Now I'm surprised by Turkey's prowess. So
Artikoglu,
Artürkoğlu, Aktürkoğlu.
I think I had him on. Tangent. I think I had him on. Is he with, what the fuck are they called again? I had a career mode with them. No, he's with Galatasaray. Okay, nothing. Yeah. I thought it was with Trabzonspor.
No problem, bro. So let's start off, of course, with Turkey. Çalhanoğlu plays as their six, and he is their six. Uh-huh. Don't think that he steps up any further because he's playing with the national team. He sits deep, almost between those center backs, pretty much. Alongside Ayhan, formerly a Serie A player as well. Not sure if he's currently a Serie A player. Well, he might be a Serie B player. Let's double check. No, he's with Galatasaray nowadays.
Yeah.
Formerly of Sassuolo. Yes. And he sits deep, Çalhanoğlu, and he orchestrates play absolutely beautiful. Mert Muldur is as the right back. Former Sassuolo player as well. Kenan Yildiz, the teenager of Juventus, starts on the left and has been a very important player for Turkey. Ever since Montella started managing over there, Yildiz actually scored a goal, but it was ruled out for offside despite his tongue coming out. Kvaratskhelia leads the charge for Georgia, and you can pretty much say that it's Kvaratskhelia against the world over here. But however, there are a few familiar faces on the bench. Lachoskvili. We meet again, our Cremonese friend whose name we could never pronounce. Not to mention
Demiral, Zeki Celik.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, quite a few Turkish players who have featured in Serie A. Also, there was a Georgian player who was signed by Frosinone. Bro, I can't find him.
Oh, God, oh, man. I'm so sorry, but I'm of zero help over here because honestly, the names confuse me so much. The names confuse me more than any other country in the world. I had Turkey as my dark horses, bro. And I stand by it. I think they have a lot of talent, and I think Montella is a good coach, and I do think he could be a better international coach than a club coach.
I think he's definitely one of the top managers in this tournament, and one of the mid-top managers, I would say.
He's not obviously
a top one, of course. There are the likes of Spalletti, of course, Nagelsmann, Ragnik, I guess, would be a little bit below those guys. Montella would be a little further down. Mm-hmm. But he has a lot of experience as a player and as a manager, and I think he's doing quite well with this Turkey side. The player who I was talking about, by the way, before is Gvernadze, who joined Frosinone.
Mm-hmm.
However, he does not seem to be here. So maybe the fact that he didn't feature much for Frosinone means that he was maybe excluded from this team. But yes, I was impressed by Georgia's fighting spirit. Don't let the 3-1 scoreline deceive you. The last goal was a fluke at the end with an empty net. They walked it in. Georgia were in the game the entire time. Kvaratskhelia had 3 men on him. It was up to everyone else to make things happen. And they definitely did. Turkey scored 2 fantastic goals to win this game. Mm-hmm. And it was action-packed. And I think Turkey did deserve the win by the end of it. But Georgia did put up a fight and should walk home with their heads held high.
And I think especially even Turkey, because they were, again, Georgia put up a fight and Turkey should be pleased with a victory of a 2-goal deficit.
Yes.
This Portugal
to the last one, bro.
Uh-huh.
This is the last one. Final of one. Round 1. It's Portugal 2, Czech Republic 1. The goal scorers are not known in Serie A.
No.
However, there are quite a few players. And the first thing I'm going to say, bro, is how star-studded is this Portugal team.
Aww.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm just going to read out the lineup just to put things into perspective. Mm-hmm. Right? Martinez, the former Belgian manager, is responsible for this team over here.
Mm-hmm.
Diogo Costa in goal. Ruben Dias at the back. Pepe and Nuno Mendes together. Dalot on the right, Cancelo on the left, Vitinha and Bruno Fernandes in the middle, with Bernardo Silva on the right, Rafael Leao and Cristiano Ronaldo playing up front. Not to mention the likes of Diogo Jota, Conceição, Semedo and Neto on the bench. This is an absolutely crazy team. And João Felix as well. João Felix as well, didn't even feature.
Paiinha.
Vitinha.
No, they... I think on paper, Portugal have the best team.
I think so, right? They might be better than France, man for man.
I think they might be, man.
Like, as a whole squad, man for man, they're better.
Mm-hmm.
The whole problem with Portugal, and this is controversial only if you're a fanboy, all right? The problem is, are they going to spend this entire tournament feeding the ego of that striker? Granted, yes, the greatest player Portugal has ever seen. But are they going to cater for him? Because this game, Leao should have never been substituted.
Oh,
Leao was creating so 100%. Many chances. Every time Leao got the ball, he looked dangerous, direct,
mm-hmm.
charging to the byline and whipping the ball and playing to his strength as well. Martinez deployed him out wide. Ronaldo was late to the balls, man. Ronaldo was...
You know what I'm trying to see?
What?
And I can't find.
What?
There was a striker, I believe, Ramos.
Ramos? Gonçalo Ramos?
Gonçalo Ramos.
Mm.
Had he not replaced Ronaldo in the World Cup and scored a hat-trick immediately, where is he?
Maybe he's injured. I don't know. Where is it there, bro?
Ah, he's here. He's here, but he didn't feature.
He didn't feature, obviously.
He's carrying a knock.
Substitute bloody... How old is Ronaldo nowadays, anyway?
37.
Look, I don't mind starting Ronaldo. I don't mind bringing Ronaldo on. Ronaldo's a fantastic player. You give Ronaldo a good cross in the air, he's going to score it. His reach is better than the average player. He's 39 years old nowadays, by the way.
Oh, my God.
However, man, you can't play him for 90 minutes, especially when you're chasing a goal. You need to manage him intelligently.
I don't know. Let's see. Because if the guy scores a mental header in the next game and then it's a penalty, then God knows what he's going to do in the next game. God knows what he's going to do in the game after that. Let me tell you, you're absolutely right. The guy has been playing in Saudi now and he didn't have the greatest of spells at United. But at the end of the day, just to remind us that this is Cristiano Ronaldo we're talking
this
about.
This is the...
Never, ever, ever write him off.
Yes.
Never, no, ever write
sure,
him off.
For sure. However, watching the game
Liba,
and that. Seeing how much he struggled to get on the end of things, man.
Because
he did struggle. He was late. He's 39. It's normal to be late. I mean, play him for 60 minutes, try to play the ball to his head, but if it doesn't work, you know, change him. Personally, I would start him off the bench and bring him on later, personally,
mm-hmm.
you know?
No, but isn't that a weird situation to be in? Because if you have a fit Cristiano Ronaldo who's like, no, I'm not retiring from the national team.
Look,
then you have to call him up and you have to start him pretty
much. Unlike everyone else, he doesn't play in Europe's top five.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone else, literally everyone else, plays in Europe's top five.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, I would personally, yes, give Ronaldo reduced minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Personally. I like the fact that he's taken on the responsibility as the number nine and he's stopped this whole crap of playing on the wing. But for me, again, it was super risky. It worked out for Martinez, fortunately for him, to bring Leao off and bring in these guys like Diogo Jota, granted. But Jota should have come off for Ronaldo, you know, and he scored the winner and he got away with it. But I think that cohesively, this Portugal team should be playing much better than they have played this game.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was quite impressed by Czech Republic. I thought they held their own pretty well.
Yes.
And they were unlucky to concede that goal in the 92nd minute. They took the lead and they only held on for 7 minutes, but it was a bloody own goal at the end of the day. That put them in the position they were in. Players from Portugal that feature in Serie A, obviously Rafael Leao, and we also had Diogo Dalot spending time at Milan as a very versatile winger, no matter if it's wing back on the right, on the left back, right back, right wing, left wing. Very, very versatile. And don't forget, Bruno Fernandes did feature for Lazio.
For Sampdoria.
Did I say Lazio?
You said Lazio, yeah. It was definitely Sampdoria. Lazio, I don't think so.
Oh, yeah, continue. Yeah.
Rui Patricio is also there on the bench. And funnily enough, Cristiano Ronaldo
Udinese and Samp.
Cristiano Ronaldo once said, don't worry about Portugal. When I retire, André Silva will be there to replace me.
Thank God.
Funnily enough, André Silva wasn't even called up to this tournament and Ronaldo was. So he's outlived the man who he claimed to be replacing him. Yes, uh-huh. That's crazy.
And there was this whole thing because Figo said that about Ronaldo. So Ronaldo passed the torch. He made a really bad call. Patrick Schick.
I'm joking. He's a fantastic player.
Who was he with, Schick?
Schick, back in the day, featured for Roma, I remember.
Exactly.
And it could be he played for someone else, actually, in Italy. Let me double check. But I think it was just Roma, if I remember
correctly. Patrick Schick is hilarious.
Yeah, Patrick Schick is just fucking on the nose.
Is there
Sampdoria, bro, Sampdoria. Yes. Yes, he was very good for Sampdoria, actually.
Was there anyone else?
I don't think so, bro.
I don't think so either. Ah! How could we forget Antonin Barak,
featured off
the bench.
Short socks, high short season. And João Cancelo, we mentioned Cancelo, right?
Ah, yes, of course, Cancelo was at Juventus. Yeah. I forgot all about that.
And Inter.
Mela, that's crazy. Back.
Dalot with Milan.
Dalot, I said.
Oh, okay.
Ronaldo at Juve. That's a crazy one.
That's hilarious. That's hilarious.
A crazy one. Ronaldo at Juve is mental. Not a fever dream. But I think that's it for this episode. This was just, obviously, we didn't want to get into the analytics of each game. First,
because we're off, all right?
Firstly, we're off. Secondly, I don't feel confident having not watched some of the games. I don't feel confident giving you guys a full rundown. There are other podcasts that are doing a fantastic job giving a full rundown. We are Serie A Spotlight, and we wanted to place our Serie A Spotlight onto the Euros and bring to light some of the players that maybe you didn't know are representing certain countries or that even got called up for certain countries or that are starting for their countries and having an impact for their countries. So that's what we're here to do. It'll be interesting to see what's to come of us in the next weeks and how we're going to handle the Euros.
Are we going to do a round two rundown? Are we not going to do a round two rundown?
I think now we've raised awareness about the players. I think maybe it's time to let them flourish and maybe focus on these guys a little bit and just be total fans of Italy
for our followers. I must say no team makes me feel the way Italy make me feel. And
not even Milan, bro.
No, Milan over and above all. I'm saying above Ezat in the tournament. For now, bro, the teams I've enjoyed the most. Romania, absolutely. They gave me goosebumps.
Literally,
Romania.
Bro. I agree. Romania. I agree.
Fucking Romania, bro. Slovakia also made me feel things. Because I knew a lot of the players as well who were playing.
Scotland made me feel things in the national anthem. Because obviously I lived in Scotland for a year, but then the second I saw them play, I'm like, ah, shit.
Even
I can't really root. Yeah.
Even Georgia had me a bit proud, like, as the smallest nation in the tournament, like. They did themselves proud, I think, with that opening game. And if you ever had to imagine what Malta would do in a tournament like this, they definitely wouldn't go the way that Georgia's game went. And if it did go anywhere near as well as that game went, we would be so proud. Mm.
I also recall, because I mentioned Malta's victory over Hungary, I also remember Malta's victory over Georgia. And I also remember Malta's draw to Turkey.
To Turkey, where
which
everyone
took
was crying.
Place on the first, on the anniversary of the first day of the Great Siege in 15, yes. Whatever, where
if
Malta
any
went
Turkish
to war with Turkey.
Listeners are
there's honestly no hard feelings, guys.
The Turkish don't even know about the Great Siege. In Malta, it's one of the greatest battles ever won. In Turkey, it's hardly even documented.
I'm not surprised, to be honest. Yes. I'm not surprised, but that's fine. That's fine. It was more of a community building. It was like a team building exercise for Malta.
Whatever happened, Dragut's head was on a stick. That's all that matters, all right? That's all that matters. He was on a stick and Lavalette was fucking waving it around. Yeah.
Anyways.
Thank you for listening, guys. If you've
thank
listened.
You, guys. We'll catch you next week and enjoy the Euros. Ciao, ciao.
This is Serie A Spotlight.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
In the football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.